This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Sam Doncaster. How are you, Sam?
Lovely day here. Happy to be here. All is good.
All is good. Excellent. Excellent. We're going to be talking about grafting today and the whole process of grafting and maybe a little bit why you might do it. But before we do that, Sam, just tell us a bit about yourself. I know you used to be a own a vineyard in New Zealand.
Yes, I did. I had one in the Moutry Clay area, Western Nelson. I went there looking for a bit of land that was just off on the side of a hill above the mist line and utilised the clay because it had a tremendous amount of water holding ability. Why, they used to have lots of apple orchards in that area. And with vines, if you can get them established, then they don't really need irrigation, in my view. On the alluvial gravel plains, I think you do, but not on the clays.
Yeah.
So I went there. And then clays with vines give a kind of characteristic. They can give a kind of slightly full-bodied sort of aspect to the resulting wine. So I was interested to see how that went.
Yeah, I've tasted Nordorf, which is a grower from there before in the past, and that was one of the things I noticed about the wine was it did have a nice richness, and I've always thought clay gives a richness, particularly to Chardonnays.
I think it does.
Yeah, but now you're working in Germany.
Yes, sometimes.
Sometimes.
Well, I'm kind of active retired, really. I'm that kind of bracket of working. Maybe I've got options.
Yeah, so you've been in the trade, how many, 30 years?
30 years or so,
30 years,
yeah.
So a lot of experience all the way through. And you're currently you're just in the process of doing a lot of grafting. So what we want to talk about today is really about the process of grafting. But before we get into that, I always think you can graft for one of two reasons. You're either grafting because you're looking for some sort of protection from nematodes or phylloxera, or you're looking for particular characteristics. Maybe you're getting a rootstock that might be lime tolerant, or a rootstock that might be slow down the growth, vegetative growth, or speed it up, that type of thing. So you're looking for characteristics that will change the vine and protect the vine. Is that the two big ones?
That's generally about it. Prior to phylloxera arriving from America in Europe, they didn't graft the vines.
No.
And they perhaps chose the sites that the vines were going to grow in a fashion which gave the resulting grapes kind of qualities they were looking for. And it's only afterwards that they started to do a lot of research work into the rootstock options that they realised they could actually start putting into different soils and things. And particularly, as you mentioned, lime there. I mean, the lime can be good for growing vines, but if you go too far into an area that's got so much free lime that it's detrimental to the vine, of course, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, you start getting chlorosis, isn't it?
There is.
With the leaves turn yellow.
And they're not picking up iron. It's got too much calcium. The recently released, whatever it is, 30 years ago, French variety Faircal, ferrous calcium, is a specific, very high lime-tolerant variety for the purpose of growing on chalks and things like that.
Yeah.
It's actually quite a good one for getting things to grow. It's got excellent abilities in scavenging soil solution. The vines grow really well with it.
Okay. And so that's for limestone. Normally it's American rootstocks because they're the ones that are phylloxera resistant.
Yes. The truth be known is that they themselves have been hybridized quite a lot, and there might be other things in there as well.
Mm.
And there is an ongoing program, you know, people are looking at the problems with sort of hotter, drier summers and using rootstocks which are better at scavenging that soil solution. Maybe they go down a little deeper when they need to. Maybe they've got sort of just a particular strength of character to find water where you didn't think there was anything there. But more and more, those warmer places, Spain, Italy, they've got selection programs or even breeding programs looking for what could be termed as modern rootstocks that are going to be doing things that the ones that we had 100 years ago don't no longer do.
Cool. Okay, so let's talk about the process of it. I've actually, when I was in New Zealand living as an engineer there, I went spent a winter doing winter pruning. And one of the things they did was they took cuttings for grafting.
Yeah.
Worst job of my life. I mean, it was bitterly cold. You're using hydraulic shears. You don't know if you cut your finger off or not. You wouldn't know because it's so cold. Not. I did it for a winter, and I was like, done. That was before I got into wine, but I'd done that, and I'm never going back there. And I know you get into that sort of thing, but do you want to just talk us through the first thing? You know, do you have particular plants normally that are dedicated for like mother stock, if you like?
Yes, there will be probably fairly specialist sort of rootstock growers in particular areas where they get long periods of vegetative growth. And so they can just grow very long lengths of the rootstock and they just harvest it.
It's not rootstock, is it? It's a cane.
It's
going to be a rootstock eventually, but it's actually just a cane on the on the vine above ground.
So they might grow this on like a, some sort of netting trestle table sideways, and they'll be tying it down and pinching off laterals like you do when you're growing tomatoes and things, but and just growing it longer and longer. That so long as it keeps growing, the more pieces of wood they have, the more money they're going to make. So it is just a process of growing that. The budwood, the scion wood that you'll be grafting.
Like the Chardonnay or the Merlot.
Yeah, exactly. These will probably come from an existing vineyard which has been grown for the purpose of getting grapes for making of wine. Very probably someone's going to have to walk through that block in the middle of the summer and have a careful look for what could be termed as rogue vines. A replant, for example, a completely different variety. Anything that's a wrong variety is going to be tagged. And when people are harvesting the canes out of there, they leave that one alone so they can only get the ones that they're looking for. There'll also be a little bit of a small shoot taken away and analyzed for virus.
I was going to say, how do they test for that?
Yeah, it's just a simple send it away, pay the money, the lab does the work, they give you the results. Not difficult.
And they do that for every plant or the...
It's best if it's every plant. If then you can say this is virus free and you can even do it with the rootstock. Mm-hmm. It's not done so commonly with the rootstock, but it is with the scion wood. I mean, this going through and checking the scion wood is quite important because there's nothing worse than getting your vines from a nursery and finding that sort of one plant in 100 is going to give you red grapes when you're looking for white grapes. So that this is taken very seriously by all nurseries. And that's done in the summer. And then later in the middle of winter, the people who are going to be doing the pruning will also be collecting the shoots. And they know the diameter they're looking for, and they get these like bundles of these long canes and tie them up in hundreds or 200s. And so they can do a calculation as to how many they've got. We've got a grafting program. We know how many we need. And so we have to do calculations as to whether we're going to get enough. Obviously, you don't want to do too much work for no reason.
Yeah.
So you just got to get the right amount, but you can't get too little.
And when is that happening? That's in the winter time.
Yeah, it's maybe sort of January, February.
So it's a nice winter program for some viticulturists or some people.
Yeah, I mean, going out there and doing the pruning in the vineyard, fine. They'll bring the material back in the evening. There'll be another half a dozen people who will be sitting down in the workshops with sort of secateurs just cutting up little pieces just where the bud is, because it's just the bud that they're looking for that's going to get put onto the rootstock.
Okay.
This is then soaked in water and it's given the quick fungicide to stop anything growing on the surface.
How many buds? Is it just one bud on the side, on the top bit?
Yep, just the one.
Yep.
Yeah. And they get put into like an onion bag, put into a plastic bag, put into a cool house and left until they're going to be used.
I presume it's kept cool the whole time, like the room that they're...
No, it's the temperature's not a big deal. I mean, if you get up to 25, they might want to start growing. But, I mean, workshops are not that warm in February.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was just wondering whether someone had air conditioning and big gas heaters to make everybody's, like, toasty.
No. Put another jersey on and go to work.
Okay, so they've collected the scion and it's basically a bud that's been collected from the field, so to speak, from a vineyard. The rootstocks come from specialist plants that they've been almost training for specifically for rootstocks.
Oh yes. I mean, the ones that I'm working with in Germany, a lot of them come from northern Italy.
The rootstocks.
Some of them come from France. There was a time when the company had a partnership with a Portuguese company. So, you know, this is an international business. Mm. People work with each other. I can say the same names have been spoken about for 20, 30 years. There's this long-term kind of family arrangements between different peoples.
Does the bud, like when you're talking about genetics in a vine, you've got two things going on. You've got the core DNA, which is a series of switches, if you like, and then you've got what they call epigenetics, where it, growing in a certain way, in a certain place, it can trigger certain triggers and create things. It doesn't change the DNA, but you know, you're in a particular environment, so certain genes will trigger perhaps. Do they care about that, or do they just care about it being, it's a clone of Chardonnay, this number?
There's not too much fine-tuning and care and attention to things like that. And there are certainly many little interesting facets and theories. For example, if you only ever take the very top bud of a long cane, graft that, then grow it again and take the next top bud, graft that, and do that 5 or 10 times, there's quite a bit of genetic mutation.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's always the one that's furthest from the plant it starts from. And you can say that vines will change away from what can be seen as a mother block vine from a number of years ago. And so there are observant people that might say, in a block where this variety always gives trouble with fungal infections, this one's always clean, but it tastes the same and it grows the same. I want to get just that one grafted up until I can start a new clonal selection.
Yeah, yeah.
And people are making clonal selections all the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's get registered as a private individual's name, sometimes a research station, sometimes it's just a regional thing. But yeah, that does happen. There are these subtle variations over time, and people do go looking for them.
All right, so we've got our Scion in the fridge, so to speak, nice and cool. We've harvested our rootstock.
Yes.
And what do we do with that? Same sort of thing, wash it and...
Yeah, pretty much. It's cut to length, debudded. It's pushed through a machine that's got a series of brushes, rotating brushes in different places. And as the cane goes through, it just pulls off all of the buds.
Yeah.
So it's a bud-free length of wood that then goes into another machine that has like electronic eyes, and it can see where the end of the cane is, and then it measures, and then it cuts automatically, pops it out the other end, counts it, bundles it, and then we stack up a pallet with bundles, give it a quick soak in a big tank, and then wrap it up in cling film so it doesn't dry out, and put it in the cool house.
And the soak is just to give it some water? Has it got any nutrients in the water? Or
No.
Just water? Yeah. Cool water, warm water?
Clean, cold water, and then it gives a quick dip in a fungicide, so it's just got a surface-acting fungicide just to keep it clean on the surface.
What about bugs or anything like that? You're worried about that? Or is it winter, so it's not so bad?
No, there's not much out there on a bare stick in the middle of winter.
No. Okay, and you've got fungicides on there, so you're not worried about mold, mildews. Okay, all right. And then, so it's sitting there. This is happening, what, January, you said?
January, February.
Kind of February.
Yeah, yeah. And then how long do they stay in the cool store for?
Well, they can almost come out 3 days later and get grafted, or they might be there for 6 weeks and then they get grafted.
Okay, so it's just you're going through a process, getting your materials, and one that there's no time limit. And you do it reasonably quickly, do you? Or can you leave it there until summer? Or
yes, you can do if you want to. It always surprises me if you stop something drying out and you keep it in a point of suspended life, you can leave them there for quite a long time. As an experiment, 1 year I had some vines which they'd been grafted, they'd grown well, they were doing nicely. Put them in the cool house and left them there for 15 months. Brought them out a week later, they were growing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like they've got a natural way of going through one winter. That ability can actually carry them through quite a long period of time.
But ultimately, though, you don't really want to keep it too long because you want to get them in the ground and you want to get them ground in springtime.
Yeah.
So you've only got a few months to get the grafting process done.
Yes. And in a horrible way, when they get lifted at the end of the summer and 80% of the roots get cut off and 80% or 90% of the green shoots get cut back, a lot of the reserves of the plant are lost.
We'll come to that. That's right at the end.
Yeah.
Let's go back to so it's a year before they get sold. They're not like just gone out.
It is a year. It is a year later.
It's a year later. Well, the spring later. Look, let's get our graft out of the...
More like 15 months. The two pieces of wood, effectively two different species. Mm-hmm. One is the tasty European variety we know and love so much, it makes fantastic wine.
Typically Vitis vinifera.
We want more of it. And then the rootstock is resistance for pests, disease, and all sorts of things. Using an Amiga-shaped blade, you can kind of punch through both of these and put them together in a way that the cambium layer is adjacent to each other and the sort of developing scar tissue can come out and join together between the two pieces and you have a new plant.
Would you call it a cadmium layer?
Cambium layer. Oh, that's where the phloem and xylem is, that all the liquids kind of go up and down within the plant.
It's, so you line those up?
Yeah, you line them up when you cut it. There has to be like the same diameter. As I sort of, you know, put my thumb out here and put my little finger, well, I mean, they're wrong. If they're the same size.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so you've got to select for diameter very carefully.
Yeah.
Yep.
But they're also different species. There's a degree of kind of like tissue rejection. They don't like going together. But because you've taken all of the buds off the rootstock, if the rootstock wants to start growing, it has to accept its new bud that's been put on top.
Okay.
Not all of them do. Many of them die in the process.
What's the rejection rate you typically?
Well, there's a lot of things that can go wrong, including someone driving over them in the field in a tractor. But, you know, things can go wrong. It's impossible to kind of count them all. If we do 100,000 and we get 65,000, we're happy.
Oh, really? So about 65% is a good, typical... All right.
Something like that.
Yeah, okay. No, that's good.
Different combinations have got different degrees of acceptance.
I imagine even different rootstock and different scions will have different outcomes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not as straightforward as you might imagine.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. I was wondering, because I never think of that. What do they call them? The xylem and the phloem?
The essential liquids that go up and down.
Yeah.
You know, it's like plant blood.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my biology isn't super duper good at that sort of thing. But
Nor is mine, but never mind. What we do, actually, when we put the two together, to retain any moisture in there and not let it dry out, we dip them in a wax.
Yep.
This wax has actually got growth hormone in it.
Okay.
And that stimulates this sort of cell division. Once it touches that, it all starts to grow really quickly. And this is why you can sometimes find on grafted vines a bit of a kind of like a bubble.
Yeah.
Where that point is. It's because it's grown so fast, so quickly.
Oh, I thought it was like scar tissue.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, it's been pushed along a little bit with a bit of assistance.
Right. Yeah, okay. And so does that mean you keep it a little bit warm, this new Amiga cut, or do you?
Pretty much the day that they've been grafted, preferably the same day, sometimes the second, they get put into large boxes which have got some kind of packing medium which will hold a bit of moisture. Perhaps it's peat based, but I mean, there are sawdust ones, and I mean, people use all sorts of things like shredded newspaper, even. I think anything that holds a little bit of moisture can stop it drying out. Now, this box is, we use ones of the size of a pallet, so we can just move them around with a forklift. They're quite heavy, mm-hmm. No way you can move them by hand. So, 4,000 of these in a box, and we're doing, you know, hundreds of thousands. And this box is then put into a warm environment. Its temperature's built up to maybe 28. Sometimes it sort of starts to do something really weird. It feels like it's generating its own heat. But I mean, in a big, big room with no ventilation, humidity is dripping water everywhere. It's just 100%, really. And the temperature will rise up to 32, 33. And when the plant starts putting out green growth, it's giving out energy into some of its reserves into this growth. And this is the point where we've got to stop that and take them somewhere else. So there's a big process of moving these heavy boxes in and out of rooms and eventually taking them out, cooling them down a little bit, putting them in a drier environment so that that leaf doesn't get fungal infection. And this is usually in like a big poly house.
So let's just go through that a little bit more carefully. So you've got your scion and your rootstock together.
Yes.
you put them into something that holds a little bit of moisture, that you warm them up. How long do you keep them warm for so they sort of start to grow and fix it?
Also probably about 3 weeks.
About 3 weeks to sort of just to start doing. And you said it starts to, the bud starts to grow a leaf, does it?
Yes. The bud probably has got more energy in it. I don't know how to really describe that, but it can push out
a leaf.
And if you pull it out of the peat and look, it hasn't actually got any roots.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is using like reserves
stored
in
energy.
The wood.
Yeah.
So it's a slightly delicate stage because when we unpack all of that, they lose anything that's already started to grow. If they've got a few little stubby roots, if they've got this green leaf, they lose all that when we unpack it. We put them out in the field, then they've got to start again.
Yeah.
I always liken this phase to sort of reserve management in that point, in that little damaged vine.
Mm.
If too much energy goes out, energy just disperses. It's no way it's going to start living in the field.
Yeah, yeah.
We start this process sufficiently early in the year so we can get them out in the field when the last frost is over.
Yeah.
And so they've got the longest period possible in the summer to grow and build up more reserves so we can assault them again later.
Okay, and when you put them in the polytunnel, are you actually planting them in the ground or in pots?
No, I go into the big rooms with a forklift and pick out the boxes I want.
Oh, and the boxes have got the medium in it as well.
Yeah. They've got all the medium in it.
And is there nutrients in the boxes?
No, it's just neutral.
Neutral.
Peat has got no redeeming features apart from holding moisture at a certain critical level.
Yeah.
When we pack them, we wash them down with water, which the material sinks down a little bit, and then we put perlite on the top. So just around where the graft union is or where there's possibly going to be a new shoot, there's no organic matter, and so there's no kind of residual kind of fungal infection.
Oh, so the canes and that thing are vertical, are they?
Yeah, vertical.
Oh, okay, so in a box vertically. So it's almost like they're planted, but they're in this peat type thing. I was thinking of them lying horizontal rather than vertical. Okay, and then the peat sort of settles down, and then does the bud become exposed? And it's
Yes, and we put perlite around it. And again, this is going to have some kind of holding moisture and some kind of ventilation there as well.
Okay. And the leaf, does it survive that period or it comes off, doesn't it?
We try and cut them off as much as we can. When we unpack them from these boxes and we're going to put them out in the field, they get re-waxed again. So a quick dip in what is like 80 degree wax is going to kill the leaves as it is.
Mm-hmm.
So I trim the leaves off if they've gone excessive.
Okay. And that tells you that the plant is viable. If there's no leaf, do you just chuck them or do you...
No. The way a bud has been formed in the axial of a leaf in the summertime previous, it's an overwintering bud. It's designed to survive the winter, just lying dormant there. In the springtime, a very tasty shoot comes out and perhaps a passing deer eats it. There's a secondary shoot.
Yep.
And this secondary shoot will do pretty much what the first one will, except maybe it's got a smaller flower.
Mm-hmm.
But supposing that gets knocked off as well, there's another one. So it's always best if we cannot damage that sequence.
Yep.
The first one is the best one we want. We can maybe trim it back a little bit if it has grown. Say it's 2 inches long, I cut it back and it's half an inch long. It'll have its own bud in there as well. It's already been established. And then they come out through the wax once they've been waxed.
Yep. All right then, Sam, I think we'll wrap it up there. Next week, we'll just look at the final step, which is getting the vines into the ground.
Good. Yep, look forward to it. Got any questions? Quite happy to answer them for you.
Cool.